Hi, I'm Shireen Gourbani, and you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political left, and I'm joined on the right by Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
And we are very excited to welcome Phil Dean, our nonpartisan guest today, in the center. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Phil.
Yeah, again, Phil Dean. I'm with the Gardner Policy Institute. I'm the chief economist there and the public finance senior fellow, which means I do a lot of stuff in a bunch of different areas. But do a lot looking at the Utah economy, and we do a lot in the public finance space, looking at both the tax side of state and local budgets and the spending side of state and local budgets.
When we say public finance, what does that mean? We're talking about tax dollars coming in, or particular kinds, or every kind?
Yep. We look broadly, and certainly we don't publish on every single aspect, but we definitely try to take a high-level view. We also try to take a long-term view of sometimes it's really easy up here on the Hill to get into the minutiae of the day-to-day and kind of the little things going on, the little tweaks or little adjustments. But we also try to be in the space of kind of having a long-term view, looking what's happening from a tax policy standpoint, as well as spending policy.
Well, could you tell me a little bit about your background? Are you from Utah? Where'd you grow up?
Yep, I did grow up here in Utah. Grew up in Taylorsville, Utah.
Yeah.
Have my a degree from BYU, degree from University of Utah. Kind of worked well when I worked here on the Hill to kind of be both sides of the aisle, I guess.
Here, just to be the most controversial, which one do you choose when it's a football face-off?
Yeah, just let us know right now so we know what side we're on.
Because Phil always has to play the middle, right? He's always the policy. Here's some information. You guys go make decisions.
Yeah.
I feel like we should make him uncomfortable.
No, don't answer. You answer only if you'd like to.
I will say I have season tickets somewhere.
Somewhere?
Okay. My question is, are they in Provo or are they in Salt Lake?
Yeah, they are. See, this is perfect. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to have a deep interest in getting really in the weeds on what people often say, right? Death and taxes kind of are like...
Yeah, and economics together with that, right? Like everybody's favorite topic.
Tell us a little bit about how you came to be engaged in this topic, really interested in it.
Yeah, so I've kind of... I have a master's degree in public administration, so that's kind of how I got into the field. And I worked on the state budget or different aspects of it for a couple decades. So I work here for the state legislature, for the Office of Legislative Research and General Counsel, staffed the tax committees here, also did some for education. But that was kind of what I did here on the Hill, a nonpartisan staff for the legislature. And then I went and worked for Governor Herbert and worked for him as his chief economist and ended up as budget director there. So I definitely worked a lot in the tax arena and have thought a lot over the years about tax policy and how that impacts the economy, how that impacts, you know, different ways of producing the same amount of revenue can have very different impacts out there.
Yeah, that's right. So, Dan, I know that our listeners maybe associate you with some of our more controversial things that happen up here on the Hill, but they also may be excited to know that you have a deep interest and have actually spent quite a bit of time really understanding.
You just associate me with deeply controversial things. For the most part, everybody else knows me as the tax nerd that is constantly working on tax stuff.
How did you become a tax nerd?
By accident. Actually, I had never really spent much time or done much with taxes until I was a freshman in the House, and Speaker Becky Lockhart said to me, have you thought about chairing Rev and Tax? And I really hadn't. And that was kind of the beginning of like running through tax issues. And it's been a baptism by fire on lots of different issues related to property tax. Every facet has this super complex, super wonky, really detailed way of looking at things. But then there's also some really fundamental basic principles that when you understand them, it helps you understand Utah's tax.
So let's break down some of those fundamental principles. What do you think are some of the core, just basic things that would help people understand the tax landscape in this state?
Well, I would say number one, the thing that I think is the overarching principle of everything is the broader the group that is taxed, the better, the lower the tax rate will be. And so as a result, if you've got a lot of people participating, you've got a lower rate versus if you narrow that base, so to speak, the rate goes up because you've got to have a higher rate to sustain the income.
Yeah. So when you're saying a broader base, are you talking about individuals kicking in, or are you talking about diversified taxing entities? Like, I guess I'm thinking about, we think about income tax, we think about sales tax, we think about kind of these different pieces of how taxes impact our lives. What are you talking about?
Yeah, to me, it's less about, I guess, the entities. It's, you know, so for example, in sales tax, right? You include a lot of things in sales tax. And if you narrow it and take it down, then you create less revenue by just the narrowing. And so in order to replace that revenue, you have to increase the rate. However, you know, if you include more products, and this was the fundamental of, do you tax food? Do you not tax food? Do you tax it? What rate do you tax it at? What is considered full taxable? What's not? That's kind of the heart of what that conversation is that broad base. Now, you know, there are some who are critical of that theory or that idea because, you know, there are inconvenient questions that have to be answered. Like, food is a necessity.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody goes without food, at least not for very long successfully. And so that's a sticking point, right? I have yet to find something that you need that the government doesn't tax anyway, but that's a whole other issue.
So Phil, from your perspective, what do you think are some foundational things that people need to understand when they're thinking about taxes in our state or trying to understand this landscape?
Yeah, first of all, if I can give a plug here, go look at our website. We have a lot of great information, gardner.utah.edu, that we have on all of the major taxes. We have some pretty significant publications out there that will help people understand. So with that plug now, one of the things I think is important to think about with tax policy is you always have trade-offs that Senator McKay alluded to. So taxing food, for example, is a very efficient way to generate revenue, meaning it doesn't cause as much economic damage as other types of taxes may do. And so, like, to the point, people are going to eat no matter what, and they're not going to stop eating when we tax food. And so it doesn't cause transactions to leave the market in the same way other taxes might. In our economist terms, we talk about the fairness of a tax system, right? Or the equity of a tax system. And so you might have trade-offs between efficiency and fairness or equity in your tax structure.
So when you say, I guess the thing that I'm curious about here is this notion that people will leave the market, right? Like that we know that people have to eat. And so that's, there's a reason that we would tax that, see that, you know, steady stream of revenue coming back into the state. Where are examples or what are things that we can think about where the taxing structure or taxing decisions that have been made in this state are driving behavior that people may not always think about?
Yeah, I think there are a host of ways that it does that, but maybe two examples to start with. Sales tax isn't applied to all consumption. It's only tied to a portion of consumption, mainly goods consumption. And that creates kind of a, 7.5% difference between the price of goods and services. And that in and of itself can shift consumption towards services away from goods. And if I'm a retailer selling goods, maybe I'm not quite as excited about that because I'd rather them spend money on the things that I do. Another one is income, right? So with income taxation, and especially with very high income taxation, that discourages people to earn income or at least taxed income. And so they may shift their behavior in response to that.
Okay, I'm interested in that. Dan, from your perspective, can you
feel bad? Like, you have to ask all these questions. I feel like we're missing this side of the argument.
Well, don't worry. I'll work it in here in the second section.
I can feel it bottled up, and I don't want you to not share your feelings. Sherry.
Well, because I'm curious about the statement that you just made, Phil, right? That people would not earn more money because of the tax rate, right? I just would have to say I'm curious about the data on that because if we look at states that have a more progressive tax structure. So progressive in the sense that people who make more are taxed at a higher rate, right? And then we think about states that have really high economic generation. sometimes there's an overlap there, right? So states where we know that they're, like California comes to mind, it comes to mind all the time, I think, when people talk about taxes. I think Minnesota actually is one of the states with the most progressive tax structure, in that those who earn the most are paying more than folks who are earning less, that are paying a smaller portion of their income back into the system, right? And they've done some things actually that we're talking about here, that you're talking about, which include the child tax, what are we calling that? The child income tax benefit, right? Like that there are different elements, different levers that other states have pulled that we're also talking about here. So I don't think it's necessarily a red state, blue state kind of thing. But I do think that there are some really interesting questions that come up for me to understand, are people genuinely leaving a state or choosing not to work in a state or take a raise because of tax structure? Like, I'd really be interested to hear those stories. But Dan, from your perspective, I'm wondering if you can talk about just a little bit of what's happened. And we're going to, in the second segment, jump deeper into what's on the horizon for us in the state. Demographically, what are you thinking about as you're working on tax issues? But a little bit of background on where we've been and where we're at right in this moment.
As it relates to all taxes?
I mean, we had a big tax cut last year.
Right. So, and obviously that is, you know, it's doing its effect, right? We've seen benefits, but at the same time, we've also seen, you know, how tax benefits or, you know, tax cuts have to be balanced in some ways. And the one thing I'd say, tax policy analysts will always, you know, the things you tax are the things you get more of, or sorry, the things you incentivize is what you get more of. And when you tax, you get less of, right? So those are the two just general principle trade-offs. And so trying to constantly get too much of something. And we saw this actually with corporate recruitment. And I can just say this from my personal political perspective, but we did a lot during the previous administration to attract a lot of corporations to come into the state of Utah, which then brought a lot of jobs. And we were getting more jobs and more growth. And in some ways, it led to a housing problem that we have now, where we've got such great recruitment. We've been so successful in bringing people in the state of Utah that now with that influx, we're now competing with people from out of state, with out of state, like California or wherever they may be, higher, you know, home values, that kind of thing, to come to Utah. And we're seeing that affect our housing prices in very interesting ways. And we're feeling the pain from that tax policy. And so you see Governor Cox, who is in some ways restraining that or being very targeted about any incentive that he grants. And it's been a while since we've heard this major announcement of a new corporation coming to Utah. Yeah. And I think that's on purpose. I think that is the governor is constantly watching, how do we get this balance right? And I think our recruitment office is kind of looking at it and saying, there's a lot of pressure here on housing, and maybe we should be careful about people we bring in. And I think you see, you know, the Senate president is really excited about data, you know, AI warehouses and that kind of stuff, and data centers. And they don't bring a lot of jobs, but they bring a lot of property tax revenue.
Yeah. Also take a lot of water.
Apparently, we live in a desert.
That's right. Well, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with Senator Dan McKay and Phil Dean. Stay tuned. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Dan McKay on the right.
Shireen Gourbani on the left, and you are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and we are so excited, which I know may feel counterintuitive, to have Phil Dean, a tax expert, to talk to us about taxes in the state and to understand what's happening kind of in our shifting state. Dan, at the end of the last segment, you talked about particular agendas that governors bring, and how the, for example, the agenda of recruiting businesses to come here has spill out impacts. So we think about, you know, that how that might overall increase people's income in the state. Right. We might be thinking about that. We might be thinking about strains on housing or roads or transportation, kind of all of those pieces of it. Right. Strains on education and even on our outdoors, right? Like many of these layers kind of come together. And I don't know that all of those are fully considered when we think about particular agendas. But I know that thinking about kind of the bigger impact is really in your wheelhouse, Dean. Can you talk, or Phil Dean, first name, two first names. Can you talk a little bit about what you, I think, recently presented on the legislature to related to how our state's changing?
Yes, we do a lot of work at the Institute in demographics. And in this case, had to do with education, and we were looking at the demographics of education. And if you look at a very significant driver of the state's budget, it's our K-12 system and paying for that. And we're right now in declining enrollment in K-12. So I'll say that again. We're in declining enrollment in K-12 in Utah, and we project that's our future over at least the next decade because of underlying demographics. The presentation this week was focused then on higher education, which is in a very high growth mode right now. They're where the K-12 system was, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, dealing with high growth. But coming down the road not too long is a slowdown and a potential decline in the college age population. And so that was the discussion, is how is that going to translate to enrollment? I think there are things that higher education can do, so it doesn't necessarily negatively impact enrollment. But if it just goes along with how the college age population goes, there will be a decline in enrollment. And be thinking about that now when you're in these very high growth years. But those are between public education and public education, higher education, those are two of the big budget drivers for the state overall.
Yeah, that's right. So now you mentioned that we have sort of a slowdown in terms of kids coming into our education system. And this goes back to, I think, a change that's really happened pretty rapidly. So when I was in office, so 2019, mm-hmm. We still were the primary source of our growth in this state were folks, kids being born in this mm-hmm. state. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that has shifted. So in-migration has overtaken our families expanding here in the state. And that is, I think, going back to this complicated kind of strain that we're starting to experience that is around housing, kind of around some of these other challenges. So talk to me, Dan, a little bit, when you're thinking about shifting demographics, this is an insight. Phil gave us a little insight into what's happening in our education system. Mm-hmm. But we know that we're actually getting a little older. Mm-hmm. We're having fewer children in this mm-hmm. state. How do you think about what decisions or where you want to head with tax policy in a way that responds to the changes that you see coming?
Right. So that's a great point, especially when you think about we're getting a little older, right? As the shadow boomers or the boomers, you know, the baby boomers, babies are coming into, you know, the age process where they're getting to the 60s and that kind of thing. We're trying to figure out, like, how do you balance a tax policy that you have a bunch of people that vote that are 50, 60 years old. So they want tax credits. They want benefits. They want, you know, they want breaks, right? And the problem is if you offer them a lot of breaks such that they're not, quote, you know, contributing as much to the system, you are narrowing the base. And a lot of ways, you can only do that so much before you look at this younger population and they start getting into office, right? And, you know, sticking it to the boomers, so to speak, that kind of thing. And then they say, well, you know, and those policy directives that come up, because we have a lot of young members of the House of Representatives, especially, and the Senate is actually getting younger, believe it or not. And so what you see is this kind of friction between what incentives or what kind of tax breaks you're giving to older folks, i.e. Social Security, versus tax breaks you're giving for young families who are trying to get into homes that, you know, the data that I've seen recently that shows, like, if our parents brought forward their revenue today and they were making their same salaries, their salary would be roughly $76,000 a year in today's equivalent. And our kids are making $56,000 a year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So wages are not keeping up. And then you look at housing costs and housing demand not keeping up there. And there's going to be this friction. And that's my overall fear of Social Security and creating too much credit, I guess, on that side of things.
Yeah.
And sticking it to what I think is a smaller, a lesser population, a decreasing population below the age of 30.
Yeah. So I want to just give listeners a little bit of context. So what Senator McKay is talking about is that there was a proposal from Governor Cox to eliminate the tax on Social Security. And I think that's being debated, right? Like there's pros and cons to this, but the general idea that you've communicated, Dan, is that we know that there are a lot of folks who are over, you know, that are getting Social Security that are much more financially stable than people might anticipate or think about, right? So it should be thinking about those who really need those kinds of breaks, as opposed to just saying, oh, everyone blanket into this category. And I don't know, I guess I just want someone at this table to explain to me, not assuming everybody's political leanings, but I do know yours, Dan. Why wouldn't we have, I understand that we have a very low tax rate when we look at all the states. We have a low income tax rate generally, so people enjoy that here in our state.
We used to have a low income tax rate, but of Western states,
we're starting
to fall behind.
We're starting to fall behind, but help me understand why a more progressive tax structure wouldn't make more sense. And again, progressive meaning that those who are making more would be taxed more, and those at the lower ends of those income brackets would pay less into the system. Why is it that that is so antithetical to the kind of ideologies that dominate up here?
I'll let Phil go on this one. Not necessarily about, but like, there's positive and negatives of both, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're trying to structure it, was it 2007 under Huntsman, Governor Huntsman, that we kind of did away with the most part the structure?
Yeah, it was kind of a transition between 2005 and 2008. So 2008 was when the current version of the system fully took effect.
And do you remember what the rationale was for, what was their take on it? And we can compare it to where we've gotten.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot had to do with economic competitiveness. So I worked for the legislature at the time, was deeply involved in those income tax reforms. And it was about economic competitiveness with that tax rate that we had at the time, a 7% top marginal rate with some pretty small brackets that didn't mean that much, really.
Yeah.
And so it was definitely an effort in the name of economic competitiveness. Now, one of the interesting things at that time, we actually did a lot of analysis working for the legislative branch at the time, and the executive branch also doing analysis on that. And in that change, it actually made the income tax system slightly more progressive mm-hmm. than it had been before. So it took a very large number of people off the property, income tax rolls at the low income level.
Sure.
With the tax credits that are in place right now in that system. And so, with everything, there are trade-offs. You're going to tire of hearing me say this over and over again, but there are always trade-offs associated with that, right? Yeah. And so that aspect narrowed the base, but other aspects broadened it. Everybody thinks about the rate cut, but at the same time, there were a lot of deductions that went away, especially deductions for high-income people mm-hmm. that people forget about.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of these dollars kind of trickle into our state. And I'm just wondering, Dan, can you share, what is the projected state budget this year?
We will be just shy of, if I remember right, we're going to be just shy of $30
billion. $30 billion. And mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken about, do you know the percentage that comes in from federal?
Well, we don't have consensus numbers yet. Federal, I can't remember that number.
Between
off the top
25
of my head.
And 30.
I was going to say 25 is the number in my head. Okay, so about 25% comes in from federal. And then what are the kind of big buckets? I know that we've had a lot of discussion in our broader public around the earmark for education. Like, what are the big buckets that these dollars go into?
So there's, I always tell people this, it's the 3-8s, right? We educate, we medicate, and we incarcerate. Right. So those are really the three biggest buckets of, the state's budget.
Good.
Right. Yep. You heard that before?
Yeah. I have not heard that.
Well, now you have a new check.
Those are my three things. Right. Educate, medicate and incarcerate. So when you look at what goes into the state budget, those are really the big rocks that have to go in first.
Yeah.
And then everything else kind of trickles in around it.
Well, and I went to a fascinating discussion on Medicaid just yesterday. So Medicaid rates in our state and the enrollment level. And if I'm not mistaken, it's about 10%. I think it's 11% of folks that are enrolled in Medicaid. And one of the things that I thought was so interesting about this presentation was that the majority of those folks on Medicaid in our state are children. And I just don't think that people are always thinking about that when they think about Medicaid, because we've had Medicaid expansion, we've had different things. But this is a very small part, actually, of our state budget, Medicaid is. But with Medicaid and Medicare, we're talking about 20%, is that right, of the population?
Yeah, and only the state is really only involved in the Medicaid portion
of
that.
Yeah. So as a person who's deeply interested in healthcare, I was interested to see that. Well, so Dan, I'd like to get back to talking a little bit about what you're thinking when it comes to this year. What should people be expecting to see? What maybe are you excited about related to tax policy? I'm honestly really excited about the idea of a child tax credit.
Tell me why.
So I think that this is, so during the Biden administration, when the child tax credit was in place during COVID, I believe, there was a reduction in childhood poverty in our country by 50%. So there are huge opportunities to improve the lives of lower income families, especially lower income kids, when we're looking at levers like that. So those are things that I'm interested in.
Yeah. And I look at the demographics from an economic report, we've made solid progress as a country for people over the age of 65. Our poverty level is now, if I remember right, people below the poverty level line over the age of 65 is somewhere south of 10%, versus we're still in double digits. It's like 19, almost 20% for those under the age of 18. So I think that lines up with your point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anything that you think our listeners need to know about Phil before we wrap up today?
Just take the time. It takes time, and sometimes it's not super exciting. But if you want to understand these things, take the time to learn about them.
To learn about them.
Good tax policy is never easy. That's the one thing I always think my initial blanch is, this is good taxes. And then I can sit down with the economists and realize why that's not a good idea. And Phil's one of the best.
Well, listeners, you need to pat yourselves on the back for getting through an entire episode about taxes. Thank you for sticking with us. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Shireen Gourbani. I've been joined by Senator Dan McKay and Phil Dean. Thank you to our producer, Anthony Scoma, and thank you for listening.